with health organizations such as Scripps, Stanford, Tenet Health, to ensure that they can get hospital administrative support teams and medical personnel out to support any local jurisdiction as well, too. We internally at EMSA, of course, have trained emergency management personnel and EMS personnel, and we support what's called a mission support team, which is a team that supports the local deployed assets in the field to make sure that they have food, water, resupply, and that they are integrating with the local system. That is usually about a 12-hour response time. We also have then what's called the Disaster Healthcare Volunteer System, which are individuals, physicians, nurses, multiple medical and health professions that have signed up in advance, and we have 20,000 of them in the state that are willing to respond in the event of a disaster. And we have a alerting system to ensure that to the extent that they are available, that we can alert them and mobilize them to help. Obviously, this is a huge volunteer effort. 7,000 of those 20,000 people are part of 40 local Medical Reserve Corps teams. So the local Medical Reserve Corps organized at the local level actually respond quite frequently at the local level. For example, last year there were over 100 deployments of Medical Reserve Corps as part of either local healthcare planning, training, or support of local health activities. For example, during the H1N1 pandemic, there were almost 200 deployments that particular session. Finally, within 72 hours, what our plan is to have mobile field hospitals available. The current status is down from what we had planned in 2006. In 2006, as part of the governor's surge initiative, $18 million investment was made to purchase three 200-bed mobile field hospitals. And these mobile field hospitals are fully equipped with emergency department, surgical suites, intensive care units, general medical surgical operational areas, isolation areas, lab X-ray. What we had originally was we had them geographically distributed, one in Sacramento, one in the Bay Area, specifically Santa Clara, and one in Southern California in the Ontario area. And what the goal of these three geographically distributed locations were was to ensure that we were able to get a hospital out the door and on the scene as soon as possible, even to the extent that we could set up the emergency services within 24 hours. Obviously, with the decrease in funding as part of the budget that took us from $1.7 million for annual maintenance down to nothing, we've had to decrease our services. What we're doing right now to backfill those dollars is to use $270,000 of the hospital preparedness grant funding, federal funding, and also beginning in October, decrease our contract with BlueMed, who has been our contractor, to decrease our services from a turnkey program directly to working as part of the Standardized Emergency Management System, OES, and the National Guard to help get those things deployed. So currently we have one that will be ready within 72 hours, and two we have currently stored in Sacramento at a location that is providing us free space, free storage space. And those will not be available within 72 hours, but we think that we can get them redeployed within 2 weeks in the event of a catastrophic event.
If you could wrap it up for us.
Absolutely.
I'm sure there are some questions.
I'll just point out that the things that we're looking for, obviously, number one, is to maintain the extent of our current assets in the face of diminishing federal dollars. That's probably number one. We are also seeing as a priority in the future the need to take a look at some of our planning efforts, especially in the area of guidelines for medical planning for mass gatherings. We have lots of mass gatherings, so this is an area, whether it's a marathon, a concert, a convention, we have to make sure that we are ready for that particular situation, for both natural, but also for events that may be terrorist related. At this point, we are also working on patient movement plans so that if we have to move something out of the patients out of the affected area to the unaffected area, we'll be able to do that. So those are some of the priorities that we have at this point, and I'm able to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have questions from the members, Ms. Waldron, and then Senator Ross and Assemblymember Pence? Why don't we go ahead and start in that order?
Okay.
Assemblywoman Waldron.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just briefly, two quick ones. The mobile hospitals that you were talking about, we did address in committee to keep them going, but I understand that there was originally, I think it was $4 to $6 million annual cost to keep them up and ready to go, as you were saying. Now there's one that can be sent out in 72 hours and the others are maybe 2 weeks. Maybe that's something we can address as we go forward and look at maybe bringing at least another one that's a little bit more ready, maybe within a week or less, you know, something like that in phase. But I'm glad to hear that you have been able to work with other agencies and, you know, try to get those operational quicker, the 72-hour, you know, that it's being able to be done even at this point. Now, the other point I wanted to bring up was the nuclear incident. My district is down close to the San Onofre power plant, which we all know about, and one of the things when the folks came to us, and it wasn't from your group, but I'm not sure which agency, they were saying, well, we have this plan for evacuation of the folks who are right next to the plant. My district is about 15 miles east, and then it goes further east. So for us, we were concerned also, because we're maybe not right next to the plant, but we were farther enough away, as the air blows, it all comes towards us. Basically to get the iodine and the different things that are necessary when something like that happens. The plan was to have the people east head towards the power plant where the centers were, you know, to distribute anything like that. And that didn't make sense at all. We want to all be heading the opposite way. So what kind of plans do you have in place for things like that, and how do you work with the locals?
We do work pretty closely with the locals, and they have revised those plans, and I think they have, particularly after the Japan incident, where we had a lot of focus and attention, and we had a hotline up and running for our locals who were very concerned, our population that was concerned from something that happened in Japan, let alone something that might happen in our own backyard. So we have, you know, done a lot of work and really done some public education as well about the impact of KI or potassium and when you need it and when you don't, because everybody wants it immediately, and you know, it really only serves a purpose for people in what they call the 10-mile ring. And so the plans really are much better than they were pre that event, but I think, you know, more can be done in public awareness and education to understand where at the local level. I think the local plans are very good. It's now how do they get the public educated to know what to expect and when to expect and when they even need potassium iodide, because they certainly didn't need it in response to Japan, but lots of people called and wanted it.
We've had other problems associated with that that seem to have blown windward to California, but we'll skip those.
Yes.
But good questions. Thank you. Senator Roth.
I'll be very quick, Madam Chair. In fact, I won't ask a question except to make a brief statement. I was on a hospital board, fairly significant regional hospital board, when Katrina hit, and we witnessed the medical issues down there in that region, which were certainly unfortunate. And I'll be honest with you, I was never, although I asked questions, I was never convinced that we had a regional plan, let alone at that particular hospital, to reconstitute medical services in the event of a significant catastrophe in Southern California. So I guess, Madam Chair, rather than ask a question, I'll shut up, but I think in our oversight function in this joint committee, I think we should schedule another hearing and devote a little bit more time and attention to the way we test and flex our emergency services system in California on a statewide basis, too, and include the medical system. And we've heard some general testimony today about working with locals and interoperability, but I'd like to have someone come in and talk about the actual regional and statewide emergency tests that we have run. I'd like to hear them talk about the grades that we give ourselves, the grades that outside folks would also give us, and the way that we inspect our system of rolling out these emergency services. So with that, I'll let someone ask questions. Thank you.
Thank you. I think that's a very constructive observation and suggestion. And when I get my chance, I'll also add my two cents worth. But Assemblymember Pan, you're a doctor. I had a feeling this might be an area of some interest to you, so please feel free. Go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think I want to second what General Roth said, but I had a separate question. Actually, it sort of leads off from, you know, our chair has cited the changing environment, global warming. That's actually going to increase the potential rate of infectious disease, contagious disease. And I have to admit, I was a bit concerned in terms of the testimony talking about how we're so reliant on essentially decreasing grants for both state and locals in terms of infectious disease control, especially in terms of limiting pandemics. And I just know that here in Sacramento County, this is before I ever even got in the office, when H1N1 hit, our county health officer was telling us how basically their local staff was stretched to the limit right before cuts were actually that were already voted on were going to be implemented shortly thereafter. So they were at limit prior to cuts that they already knew were coming down the line. People were working really hard in the front lines who knew they were about to lose their jobs. And so one of the things is I was wondering was to what degree does the State Department of Public Health, in conjunction with the locals, in terms of defining the actual capacity, and realize you're probably doing the best you can, but I think it is important for us in the legislature to know how is our capacity being affected over time, both in terms of local public health departments as well as the state, in terms of being able to address emergencies like infectious disease outbreaks and so forth? Because I mean that's a critical part of being able to protect. And when you have a disease outbreak, that has it's not just about people getting sick. I mean it locks up commerce. It ties. I mean it has a huge ripple effect throughout the community and the state. So what is the department doing in terms of trying to define the capacity on an ongoing basis and reporting that to the legislature?
I think, one, we have maintained the state's capacity because we've prioritized it over other activities in the grant. So even with declining funds, we have not reduced the state epi and laboratory capacity. And so we have that to support the locals, but I agree with you in terms of like Sacramento County, you know, took a 40% cut since to their public health department. And so recognizing that there's less epi and lab capacity across the state, you know, our capacity is maintained, and that's okay if you have an event in one area or another, but I think we're all trying to kind of gauge what level of capacity do we need for the large event. Because I think right now, in terms of monitoring and running the day-to-day kind of things, we're okay. But at what point does that, and it's a hard thing to measure, and I can get some more information from our Center for Infectious Diseases, but I know that, you know, day-to-day is a far cry from H1N1, which, you know, at that time, we had more robust local health departments, and we had the state capacity as well. So I can get more information from our infectious diseases about how they're measuring their ability over time to maintain that capacity.
Thank you. And yeah, obviously, it's not day-to-day that we're here talking about.
Right.
Yes, and I wanted to reiterate that. The mobile hospitals is a perfect example. As I understand it, they're here in Sacramento, and two of them are being housed because someone's giving us free rent. But there's a whole big state that goes south of here, and you've got the Los Angeles basin, however we define it. There are you know, half the state's population is down there, going down to San Diego. We have the Central Valley. This is a great concern to me. I think it's really, we can get one up in 72 hours, but we don't know when we could get the other two up. I mean, if we have a major incident, what we know that early intervention is critical. And if we're waiting to put up a mobile hospital to assist because it's sitting in a warehouse somewhere, I mean, this to me is a violation of our responsibilities as a government to the people. So what I would like is to find out, is to ask you to please tell us, and I think this is consistent with the inquiries going on here, what it would take to get this state back on track so we are as prepared as humanly possible if and when we have a pandemic. We're not talking about us, you know, contained, but we're talking here about a catastrophic event. We owe it to the people of California to at least be informed as to what we can and should be doing. If we choose not to do it, that's one thing, but we need the information. I know there will be many of us here who will push very hard to make this a priority of the state. We're due for another earthquake. There are clearly things going on, global climate change, which I had mentioned we're going to address it further, the impacts on disease and all sorts of things as a result of the warming of the planet are going to result in major events that are going to affect the people of the state, and it is our duty to try to protect them as well as we can. So when we hear about your efforts to work with the locals, but the locals are seeing cuts anywhere from 25% to 40%, that's going to impact your ability to do your job. Again, the mobile hospitals is just sort of a visual and clear illustration of the fact that we are cutting back, and perhaps to a point where we are not protecting the people of the state. And so I hope that as we continue to address this, and I'm going to make this my close, and before I do that, though, do we have any public comment? All right. I think this is just the beginning of a very important discussion on what we're going to do and what we can do to protect the people of the state. Obviously, the medical services are a critical component. If we should have some kind of incident, whether it's nature-made or man-made, you are going to be at the front lines, and it's going to be very important to make sure that that you have all the things you need to do what is humanly possible to protect the people of the state. So we will continue. This is just the beginning. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for all your good work. Thank you to the members of the committee who are here, and we will stand adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.